Today I will talk to you about how we think that matter matters in asymptotically safe gravity. In particular, this talk is based on my work together with Astrid and Roberto Percacci. We are almost done with the paper, so it will be out soon. So this is a very, very short outline of the talk. We'll first talk about the motivation that are behind this this work. Then, since I don't know if everybody here is familiar with asymptotic safety, I will introduce briefly some basic concepts I need in order you to understand the main part of the talk. Then I will explain why we believe that matter matters in asymptotically safe gravity. So we will just explain you. I will just explain you all the results we had, and then I will conclude with some remarks and some outlook. So traditionally, in quantum gravity approaches, the matter is ignored or is introduced as completely dynamical. This is justified by saying that matter will be non-interacting in the UV or is emergent, so it comes from some topological configuration of the quantum space-time, non-trivial topology. But this has the obvious difficulties that is non-trivial to pull out the complete standard model with all its quantum numbers and interaction from topological configuration of space time. So, okay. But in asymptotic safety, actually, it's quite easy to include matters. Since we are based on local continuum quantum field theory, everybody knows how to treat matters in a quantum field theory. So the inclusion of matter in the asymptotic safety scenario is pretty straightforward. In our work, also, we will treat all the matter as fundamental. So we will include matter fields since the beginning. And this is motivated by the fact that we have strong indication that in a asymptotic safety scenario, the matter is fully interactive at the ultraviolet. So now I will very briefly introduce what asymptotic safety is for the people that don't know or are not completely familiar. So we all know that the perturbative quantum gravity is renormalizable. Since we are all doing quantum gravity, this is our starting point. In particular, it's not normalizable at the one-loop level with matter, or a two-loop level with pure gravity from the work of Gorov-Sinyaki, that is quite famous. So we are basically done with, a quantum field theory approach for quantum gravity. No, we are not. And the solution was proposed by Weinberg in 1976. And so his proposal is that maybe quantum gravity is asymptotically safe. What do I mean by asymptotically safe? Asymptotically safe, I mean that there exists a non-trivial fixed point in the renormalization group flow for the gravity. And then Thuder works improved the calculability of the system by introducing the use of the effective average reaction and the functional renormalization group. And actually, it's more than 2 decades that people are working in asymptotic safety, almost 3. There's a lot of work in the field. And the main result is that there are evidence of the existence of a non-Gaussian fixed point in the gravity RG flow in a lot of truncation. But we are still missing a complete and final proof that this is the case. So what are the basics about the asymptotic safety program? So first of all, you have to specify the theory. To specify the theory, you just pick the field content of your theory. Say, for example, I want some number of scalar fields, some fermions, and some vectors. And then you choose the symmetries all your fields should have or and obey. Then you have to choose the action. To choose the action, I mean just choosing a specific combination of the monomial of the fields that has the symmetry you want. Then you have to look at the theory space. For theory space, I mean the collection of all the possible action. And you can parameterize all this possible action with the couplings of all the monomials of the fields. And finally, you have to compute the normalization group flow of this coupling. In general, you can compute you can connect, say, the physics at different energy scales. More in particular, when you talk about couplings, you have to compute beta function. Okay. When you have the beta function, then you look for fixed points. Looking for fixed points, for fixed point, I mean, I define a fixed point as a point in the theory space, so a set of all the couplings, where these couplings stop running, or saving the beta function language, all the beta function vanishes. This fixed point has some properties. In the case, so we want that are well defined, or there are no divergences along the trajectories. So we distinguish 2 classes of trajectories. The relevant and irrelevant one. The relevant one are the one that are attracted to the fixed point, and the irrelevant one, the one that are repulsed. And in order to require predictivity for the theory, so you need a finite number of measures to completely point out your theory. we require that at the fixed point there are a finite number of relevant directions. This last point is special for gravity, since you're doing somehow something different that you usually do with the renormalization group. So we are looking for an ultraviolet fixed point instead of infrared. And we know the infrared. So we know that in infrared we have GR. So one of the requirements is that the RG trajectories approximate very well the GR in the infrared. So this is the last technical slide about asymptotic safety. So it's a bit crowded, but it was just to try to not give too much technical details that are maybe not very interesting. So how we do calculation? So we start, we will use the functional renormalization group approach. That is one introduced by Reuter and Bethridge in the first years of the 90s. So we start from a generic action, S. There I just put a placeholder field. So this is valid for every field. Here that phi is a scalar, but just for simplicity of writing down the formula. Then We introduce a modification to this action. So we introduce a mass term that is this delta S that has this shape. It's basically the integral of some function of the Laplacian times the field. So this is a mass term, you can see. This R is a generic function. The only thing we require is that it's monotonically decreasing. And we call this function as cutoff. So if I say cutoff, I mean this is another name for this function. And we also require that in the small argument regime, this function is linear. And in the big argument regime is vanishing. So this function basically discriminate about low modes and high modes, high momentum and low momentum modes. And we are basically integrating out all the high momenta, since are the one that are not that are not affected by this cutoff function, and the low momenta are suppressed by a mass term. After you wrote down this, say, cutoff term, you can compute in the standard way the generating functional for the connected green functions, but this time is scale dependent. So this scale here is the scale that we introduced via this additional term. Then, as you usually do, you Lagrange transform, and what you get is the effective average action. So here I'm lying a little bit, so you don't do the traditional Lagrange transform, you do this transformation, and then you subtract back this term you added here. So what you get is this gamma k, and gamma k is called the effective average action and has basically two properties. So for k that goes to zero, you just obtain back the standard effective action. And for the scale that goes to infinity, you obtain the bare starting action you put into the theory. The most important tool we have to do calculation is the Wetterich equation. So I'm not proving this equation, I'm just saying that it's true. So basically, the derivative respect to the dimensional scale, this dt, by t I mean the log of k, so it's just a way to do a dimensionless derivative respect to the scale. So this, the derivative of the effective average action is obtained by this formula. So this is a super trace. So you're just keeping in account the sign. So you just put a plus sign if there are scalar degrees of freedom, and a minus sign if you're using fermion or something that comes from the brain fart. So fermions or Gauss, for example. Also, this trace is on all the possible indices, so the all the explicit indices, the spacetime, and this RK is the same cutoff function that we introduced there, and that's all. So, okay, now we can start talking about the main topic of the talk. So why matters in asymptotic safety? So let's start from our truncation. What we are considering for matter? So we are considering scalar fields, fermion fields, and abelian gauge fields. Everything is minimally coupled to to gravity. For gravity, we just took the basic Einstein-Hilbert action, that is just r minus 2 lambda, where lambda is the cosmological constant. So we're considering cosmological constants. And then there's the gauge fixing for the gravity and the corresponding Gauss. So I said that we are using Einstein-Hilbert. I said also that we are using minimally coupled massless matter fields. And technically, how we are doing computation to get the the effective action, we are using background field methods. In particular, the background field method helps you, is very useful when you want to keep the gauge invariance of your action. It's also useful to have a background in order to make a distinction between high and low momenta that you need in order to define asymptotic safety, the asymptotic safety program. And the background independence is in principle achieved by keeping the background independent. So general. Okay. So here in this slide, I'm reviewing basically all the past results we had about matter coupled to gravity in the asymptotic safety scenario. So the work is basically done by Roberto Percacci and Perini in these two papers. I will explain everything, so don't worry if it's not clear. So what's this plot here? Okay. What they're doing here is basically what we will be doing in the rest, what we done in the rest of the of our work. So it's basically asking how many matter fields I can couple to gravity and requiring that gravity still has a non-Gaussian fixed point. So the shaded region here and there is the region compatible with the existence of this fixed point. These are the number of scalars, and this is the number of fermions we are coupling to gravity. And this line here are the same shape that we have here, okay, moving when we are adding vector fields. So if we add vector fields, this region just grows in this way. So what information we can extract from this plot is that basically, if we keep low enough the number of fermions or scalars, we can add the other type of fields. And we can add as many of the other type of fields as we want, and we still have a fixed point. So a scenario, for example, like the standard model that has very few scalars and a lot of fermions will be here. So it's compatible in this scheme with the existence of a fixed point. So just two technical remarks about this work that are useful to understand what we have done to improve these results. So the first thing is that they used a different RG flow closure. By RG flow closure, I mean they just took the anomalous dimension of the graviton to be equal to the anomalous dimension of the Newton constant, and all the other anomalous dimension vanishing, so zero. Moreover, they used the say a wrong type of cutoff on the matter fields. By wrong, I mean that in a previous paper, me and Roberto proved that using a regulator that depends directly on the Laplacian for fermion fields is just wrong. So it does not give you, it does not have all the properties you require in order to have a well-defined theory. So what one should be do is just to take the cutoff on the Dirac operators on the kinetic part of the action. Okay, so now let's come to our work. What we've done in difference from the previous work of Roberto, we did a lot of computation, and believe me, there are a lot. Basically, we've computed the running of all the wave function renormalization for all the fields. We can relate the anomalous dimension to this wave function as just the derivative logarithm. Okay, actually, how we managed to do this computation. So I will skip here all the technical details. If you want, I can show you. But basically, if you remember the Wetterich equation I showed you before, you just take that equation and you take a derivative with respect to external field. And this way you can compute the run, say, not the running of the effective action, but the running of the effective two-point function. And from that, you can just project on this on the running of this quantity very simply. So we are considering the graviton and Gauss contribution to their own wave function renormalization. This is not actually our work. This is work of done by some of our collaborators in CISA, and it already have been put on the archive. What we have done is all the computation that are related to the matter fields. So we computed all the wave function normalization of the graviton due to matter contribution, matter fluctuation contribution, and the matter wave function renormalization that comes from the graviton fluctuation. So, okay, after computing all the anomalous dimension, one should compute all the beta function, or the two beta functions that we have in our truncation. I'm not writing explicitly here the shape and the form of these two beta functions because they are very huge. So it will be it will not be useful to have the explicit expression. So I just put it here the arguments that these two beta function depends, and there are a lot. So we have these two beta function and all the expression for the anomalous dimension, and what we have to do to recover the beta function that then we want to solve to find the fixed point is just to solve a linear system in all the anomalous dimension and plug the solution back in here. And then look for the fixed point in the Newton's constant and cosmological constant. Okay. So once you have done that, you can ask, okay, but how can I discuss the compatibility with the matter content of the theory? So here I just remember that NS is obviously the number of scalars, NF number of fermions, and VU number of vectors. So when you look for fixed point, you usually find a lot of fixed points that are not actually all good. By good, I mean they're not physically relevant. So a way to see if a fixed point has all the properties we require is that to apply these three criteria. First of all, we require a positive Newton coupling at the fixed point. This is not a strict a physically motivated, say, requirement, because actually we have no information about the Newton's coupling at the fixed point, at the non-Gaussian fixed point. But we know that the Newton's constant is positive of at the infrared fixed point, say at the Gaussian one, that is the one where we live. Since we don't know any truncation that change the sign of the Newton constant during the flow trajectory, and in the infrared, the sign is positive. So we also require that the sign in the ultraviolet is still positive. Then we look for fixed point with two relevant direction. And this is motivated by the fact that is what we usually have without matter fields. And we also look at a moderate critical exponent. By moderate, I mean not too big, because too big critical exponents mean that you have a very large anomalous dimension. That means that you are basically not capturing all the degrees of freedom you want with the present truncation you're using. So too big a critical exponent mean maybe that you have to expand your truncation, so that data are not to be trusted too much. OK, so before going on and show you the actual results, I want to give you some more precise information, some more precise grasp of on what we are doing, but looking at the oversimplified version of our analysis at the one-loop level, where I can actually write down the beta function explicitly. They're very simple. So if you look at these two beta functions, and if you look back at these three compatibility requirements, the only one that is non-trivially realized is that the one that requires the Newton's constant to be positive at a fixed point. So from this beta function is straightforward to say what's the condition on the number of matter fields to have positive fixed point for the Newton's constant. You just have to put negative this coefficient here. And what you get is this plot. So this dot here are all the dots that are compatible with the existence of the non-Gaussian fixed point at the one-loop level. This plot actually is done for zero vector fields, but you can see very easily that we have two combination of the three parameters here that enters in the game. So adding a third parameter just shift this plot in this direction. So we are basically trying to parametrize a theory with three parameters, but that enters only in two combinations. So the third one is basically redundant. OK. So what you can see from this plot, that is very different from the plot that I showed you before is that here you cannot add as many as scalars or fermions as you want. So actually, you have a bound here. You have a maximal number of fermions and scalars you can couple to gravity and still keeping a non-Gaussian fixed point. Okay. So here I will discuss very briefly another criteria we can use.
Where does the standard model give in the diagram?
Here. So actually, this diagram is for zero vectors. If you put 12 vectors, this line here, this border here, just shift in this direction. And the fixed point is still in, is still compatible at one loop level. That is a nice result, say, but I won't trust too much the one loop analysis numerically. So I will show you after, in a few minutes the precise results with, without any one loop approximation. So here we are adding, we want to derive a new criteria to even constrain even more the parameter space that are, that is compatible with the existence of a non-Gaussian fixed point. And to do that, we use the fact that we require predictivity on our theory. So we want a finite number of relevant directions of the fixed point. It's the same thing I said before in the introduction. So in principle, let's consider an operator O that is a monomial in a field. The dimension of the coupling that corresponds to this operator is just the dimensionality of the spacetime, d in general, minus n times the dimensionality of the field. This is trivial. So we pass then to dimensionless quantities, to the dimensionless coupling. And this is its expression as a function of the scale, okay, here. So when we compute the beta function, you have just to take the derivative here. You just get derivative respect to the logarithm of the scale. And you just get this dependence on the dimensions and the anomalous dimension of the field. So then from the beta function, you want to compute the critical exponent at the fixed point. And to compute the critical exponent at the fixed point, you have just to linearize this beta function. And the leading term is still this guy here. So this combination of dimension of the field and anomalous dimension, the phase of monomial and dimensionality of the space. And then if you just require that only a finite number of these kind of operators are relevant at the fixed point, you have constraint on this coefficient here. So without the minus sign, this thing here in the parentheses has to be positive. So you just take it. You can do the limit for the number of fields that goes to infinity. This limit is basically saying that you want that just a finite number of these kind of operators are relevant. And this is what you get. So basically, you had that the anomalous dimension should be greater than minus 2, the dimension of the field. In particular, for the graviton, what we have is that the anomalous dimension of the graviton should be greater than minus 2, the dimensionality of the spacetime, plus 4. And this is an additional requirement we can put on our fixed points. So this is not something I considered before, but we will consider it in the following. OK. So what's the complete, say, effect of matters on the fixed point? Here I listed the three kind of matter fields we couple to gravity. So adding scalar fields, by adding scalar fields, you shift the Newton's constant at the fixed point to smaller values, and the cosmological constant to larger values. Adding fermions, you had a different behavior. So the Newton's constant at the fixed point becomes larger, and the cosmological constant become more negative, so become smaller. The vector fields has the same effect as the scalar fields. Okay, this is the complete plot for zero vector fields. So what you can see here, the shaded region was the one loop region we found before with the one loop level analysis. The stars are the the points that are compatible with the existence of the fixed point, but just by requiring the first three criteria, so positivity of the Newton's constant, two relevant direction, and not too big critical exponents. And the orange dot, I think, okay, the dots, I don't know the color, are the one that you obtain by requiring also this additional criteria about the anomalous dimension I just explained. In particular, you can see how considering the correct closure, how they called in the previous paper from Alessandro and the other guys I showed you before, the inclusion of the anomalous dimensions leads to a more complicated boundaries of the region, and it shrinks it a bit as you consider. And moreover, we have that higher derivative operator can have a significant effect on the anomalous dimensions. So in order to believe better on this our last criteria, we should explore a more refined truncation. Okay, this is another nice plot we have here. So this is the plot with different numbers of vector fields. You can see how the green dots are the region compatible with the existence of the fixed point with 24 vector fields. The red circles are the one with 12 vector fields, and the black squares are the one with 6 vector fields. You can see that the behavior is pretty much similar to what was happening before. So adding vector fields, we just enlarge the region, and the region are quite similar one to the other. This line here are the correspondent one loop level region of with the 6 vector fields and 12 vector fields. What you can see here, maybe here is not very clear, but I can assure you that this picture here is quite similar to the other one, just smaller. And what you can see here is that we still keep this nice criteria we have, that there's a critical number of scalars and fermions we can couple to gravity in order to keep the requirement that there's a fixed gravitational fixed point in the theory. And the same is true here, but you cannot see this bigger region that we had some, say, time difficulties, because to produce this plot, you just spend a lot of computational time. So it's quite difficult to explore the complete parameter space. So we just truncated here for simplicity. OK. What's this picture? This plot is the same as this one for 12 vectors. But the stars, okay, are the fixed point that are compatible with the additional constraints that we discussed after the first three. So the constraint on the anomalous dimensions. And as you can see here, the region shrink a lot respect to this case here that has no vectors. Okay, so let's look at some specific realistic matter models that we can consider. So here I reported some actual data. So for example, in the case of no matter, so this is the pure gravity fixed point. We have the values for the fixed point, the critical exponents that are both positive and reals. And this is, something different from what you find usually in the literature, where these critical exponents usually are complex numbers. So I conjugate complex numbers, still with the real part positive. That is the requirement that the fixed point is attractive in the ultraviolet. and this is a specific feature of this new closure we are using. So it's a specific feature of the fact that we are considering the anomalous dimension explicitly. So we are computing all the anomalous dimension, and we are using them to close the beta function. In particular, we can look at the standard model. And we see that, in principle, the standard model is compatible with the existence of the non-Gaussian fixed point. But we can notice how the anomalous dimension of the graviton, is quite large. So this this feature here, so the fact that the anomalous dimension is quite large, is a first sign that maybe we should look at more carefully at this case. For example, we should consider extended truncation, so just keeping higher derivative in the graviton, so not just Einstein Hilbert, also considering R squared terms and higher. Or we should also, for example, consider momentum dependent graviton matter interaction, or also matter self interactions that here we ignored totally. So here the matter, as I said in the beginning, is massless and non-interactive. And also I should add that, or this is a simplification we are using. So this is not really the true standard model. It has just the same field content, plus the fact that the gauge fields are all abelian here, because using non-abelian gauge fields will require a way more involved computation that we didn't do. In particular, what can we see is that already at this level, the minimal extension of a supersymmetric standard model is not compatible with our constraints.
Sorry, why do you get these half integer numbers for the fermions?
Sorry?
I mean, they're not integers, right?
Yeah, because here we are considering Dirac fermions, and in the standard model you have Valle fermions. And since.
For the neutrinos?
You have Valle fermions for the neutrinos, but you can also write the world standard model in terms of Valle fermions. Nothing. So you can do it. And but since our formula is written in terms of Dirac fermions, to get the exact correspondence, you have to put half integer numbers here. But it's just a computational trick. So the difference is basically if you're using Dirac fermions since the beginning, you have a 2 overall in front of the bifermion, sorry. You have a 2 overall in front of all the formulas. So all the computations are basically the same, apart a factor of 2 that comes always coupled to the number of fields. So you can just say, OK, I'm using direct fields with a half integer number. It's basically the same.
Compatible?
I mean that there's no non-Gaussian fixed point here. If you go there and look, you don't find any non-Gaussian fixed point with all the requirements we listed. Okay. Then we can also do another step. So it is known that a quantum gravity scale emerged dynamically from the asymptotic safety framework. That is the transition scale to the fixed point regime. So when the Newton's coupling just become passed from constant to scale dependent in 1 over scale square way. And it has been shown that this scale usually is close to the Planck scale as number in the Einstein-Hilbert truncation. This is basically something similar to what happens in the QCD, that the scale lambda QCD just emerged dynamically from the model, the computation. And we can study how this scale is affected by adding matters to the game. In particular, we saw that the scalars have a little effect in to the shift of this scale. But the fermions shifted this scale to larger values. In particular, for the standard model, if you put the standard model field content in here, this effect is a little bit smaller than the case of fermion only. And the shift of this scale in the standard model case is approximately a factor 10. So we are shifting by a factor 10 towards the Planck scale. So this could be, say, an additional difficulties to the to the detection, the experimental detection of the quantum gravity, because we are shifting, say, the scale where quantum gravity counts to even higher energies. Obviously, all these results has to be taken numerically very cautiously, so they are not so precise, because we are doing a lot of approximations. So, for example, this is not a real standard model, and blah, blah, blah. the truncation is Anthony Hilbert, and etc. So this is the picture that shows you explicitly how this scale appears. So here you have the dimensionless scale. This is the logarithm of the scale. And the blue one is the dimensionless Newton's constant. The purple one dotted should be the gravitus anomalous dimension. And the red one is the, the cosmological constant. Okay. Then we can also discuss what's happened to higher dimensions, since all our analysis is valid for any number of, for any dimension. So we went on and we analyzed what happened in 5 and 6 dimensions. Here I will report only the results for 5 dimensions because the 6th dimension is not is still work in progress. We have all the data. I still have to produce all the plots. So this is the only complete plot, as I said before, it requires a lot of computational time to put it together. So, so what we see from here, this is the picture of the compatible region. Here I plotted directly with the picture with 12 vectors, so with 12 abelian Gauge fields. So you can by yourself see that the standard model is not compatible with this region in 5 dimensions. So in principle, one could use this criteria to discriminate in some way the possibility to have extra dimensions. Okay, so let's conclude by reviewing everything we have said during this talk. So basically, we studied the compatibility of matter degrees of freedom in the asymptotic safety framework for gravity. So we studied the effect of the scalars, fermions, and abelian gauge fields, and the compatibility with the existence of an interacting fixed point. Then we resolved, say, the approximation of the anomalous dimension. So we are including all the anomalous dimensions of all the fields in the computation. That this is the big new thing we did in our work. And also we suggested a new criteria to discriminate the fixed point. Using the predictability of the theory and the connection with the anomalous dimension. The main result we had that is different from all the other previous analyses is that we predict an upper limit for the scalar, fermions, and vector degrees of freedom that you can couple to the theory. Then we focused on particular matter models. We saw, for example, that the standard model matter content is compatible with the existence of a fixed point. But we put some restriction to its extension, for example, the supersymmetric one. Then we went to larger dimension, in the specific just 5, but I can assure you we will do also for 6. And we found that in general, the allowed region for the matter content shrinks a lot. And in particular, already with 5, we have no more compatibility with the standard model matter content. And finally, we also look at the effect of adding matter degrees of freedom to the quantum gravity scale. And we saw, for example, that fermionic matter moves the scale to higher regimes, that the scalar matters basically does nothing. And altogether, for the standard model in four dimension, this scale just shifts for a factor 10. Okay, this is basically everything I wanted to say about synthetic safety. Then I want to add a very, very small outlook. This is basically on myself. It's not connected to the work I presented to you. So basically, what is my dream about my future? So what I want to do after this work? So my dream is see if it's possible basically to define some RG in some sense. This is still to be understood in details in the loop quantum gravity theory. So many attempts has been used in has been tried in the literature. For example, there are papers about the functional renormalization group equation that is the core of asymptotic safety applied to the group field theory. That if you were here at Loops, you could listen to Thomas' talk. It was very, very nice. And I also know that Daniele and Dario are working on with just one E, okay, are working on that. And then one can also ask if it's possible to define a coarse grain, say, a la Wilson, of spin networks. And this is basically done by Bianca and collaborators. Then one can also ask if it's possible to define a coarse grain concept in the twister space, and this is proposed by Etera. What I actually am trying to do, together with Simone Speziale, is try to define geometrical way to implement, say, a coarse grain in the spin networks, even if we are still working at the classical level. I think that on this subject, there are not any definite result, but there's a lot of work to do. So if someone is interested in some stuff, can come to me and we can discuss about any of this subject. And thank you for your attention.
So you said you had a billion vector fields.
Sorry.
So you said you only considered a billion vector field.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea what the dependence on n if you took SUN Young-Wirth fields?
Actually, no. Okay. Since the computation, I think it's quite hard to repeat everything we did for a billion fields for non-abelian one. I don't think it has been done by anyone up to now, and I have no idea
I remember like 4 or 5 years ago there was by Martin Rogen with the chart.
They didn't calculate the back coupling on the gravitational sector, but you could imagine that this shouldn't change from our results here. What will change is the Young-Wirth dynamics itself and that anomalous dimension. And so the complete system might look slightly different, but you could argue that
okay, so
the leading order effects are captured by the abelian fields if you're interested in in the gravitational field.
Okay. So the backfeeding into the fixed point would only be through the anomalous dimension.
That would change.
That basically the main difference between the standard computation and our computation.
So then you could just do a parameter scan and say, okay, I estimate that effect to be so and so large and put that in.
Yeah.
If you look at the difference between the one-loop result and the one with the anomalous dimensions, you see that, you know, qualitatively the one-loop result captures the main effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then including the anomalous dimension and varying that number gives you a subleading effect.
Yeah.
And so you would expect that abelian and non-abelian, that change also gives you something subleading.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
I don't remember hearing about the emergence scale that you mentioned at some point from NRG people, but is it a new thing or I just...
No, I think it's from some years ago from a work of Reuter.
Okay.
But if you want, I can give you the reference.
And do you guys have an idea of what the scale will be?
Physically, what should this scale correspond to? In Reuter's work, it was approximately near, say, the Planck scale.
Oh, okay.
But, our prediction is just to move that scale a little bit nearer to the Planck scale. But all the numerical details here, so the precise number, is not very meaningful, say, because it depends from a lot of details.
I was very interested by your result that there is a bound in the number of fields consistent with the existence of a fixed point. Does this have, in your mind, anything to do with bounds on entropy contained in a given region? There are connections between gravity and the maximal number of degrees of freedom. Do you see any connection between the two sets of results?
So a direct connection, no. But I think that you can try to use this kind of bounds to do some computation regarding black holes, because you have, if you have a finite number of fields, then it's easier to compute, for example, partition function or some other thermodynamical quantities. So.
Do you have a heuristic explanation of this phenomenon of the maximum number of fields? The connection with gravitational dynamics? Can this be understood?
Nice question, but I don't really I cannot answer you so simply. I have to think about it. It's not.
Okay, more questions. Let's thank you again, and we will kind of come.